Greetings, you're listening to Rebels Remembered, featuring Caitlin DeFord and Kelsey DeFord.
Greetings, fellow travelers across the galaxy. I am Kelsey.
I am Caitlin.
And this is episode 13 of Rebels Remembered, Call to Action. Call to Action originally aired on February 9th, 2015. It is directed by Stuart Lee, again, one of the Lee siblings, and is written by Greg Wiseman and Simon Kinberg. Greg Wiseman, I think we've seen before.
Yeah, I think we've seen a couple of times.
And Simon, I mean,
I don't think we've seen him since probably the pilot.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I was thinking too, as well. Both, I think, very influential writers in the show, in the series.
Yeah, especially with season one.
Okay, so the Wikipedia breakdown. It says the episode centers around rebels attempting to hack a transmissions tower to send an inspirational message of hope. They have contend with Imperial forces, newly energized, and it begins with the appearance of a figure not unknown to people that know Star Wars, which is Brand Moff Wilhuff Tarkin, governor of the Outer Rim.
People are about to hate me on the internet, but I did not know his first name until today. Wilhuff.
I think it's one of those names that, again, with Star Wars, does not roll off the tongue. So for me, it's hard to remember. But when I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, Tarkin. But it's kind of like I go, Governor Blah Tarkin. I kind of miss the first name every time. But I guess we can start from there.
Because this episode starts with...
Yes.
First, it starts with the Imperial March, which I'm not sure we've heard it. Except for Empire Day.
The Empire Day had it, but it was like a...
Upbeat version.
A dubstep version of the march.
And sometimes you hear it, like little stings of it, but I really feel like the beginning of this episode, it's a lot of it is in the beginning.
I really love the opening shot of this... Because it calls back to, I felt it called back to A New Hope. It's got the big ship and then...
Yeah.
And then you see this little, I don't know what the little ship's called. It's not a TIE, it's I don't
Destroyer?
Know.
Destroyer? Is it a destroyer?
The ship that Tarkin's on and then it flies to Lothal. I don't know what that ship's called, but I just really like that shot. Plus, kind of weird that that's happening at nighttime.
Yeah.
We don't see a lot of nighttime scenes, I don't think, in season one a lot of the time.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back and think. Maybe
Out of the Darkness when the asteroids and maybe Empire Day? Was that at night?
Yeah, I think Empire Day was
yeah,
night.
Okay. Yeah. But yes, speaking of Tarkin, gonna throw this trivia out here. Steven Stanton reprises this role. He originally voiced the character when Tarkin was an admiral in Clone Wars, and that was a season 3 episode, The Citadel. Which, if you haven't watched that episode, it's interesting because you kind of got to see the person that Tarkin will become.
Oh, yeah?
And a lot of his,
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. A lot of his decision-making is reflected in, you know, the person that he'll be later.
Well, we start this episode with, like you said, the big Star Destroyer coming in, the Imperial March is planned. So you know, as a viewer, if you know that March, okay, something important's about to happen in terms of the Empire. And of course it's revealed that Tarkin has arrived because to personally handle the rebel cell, because he's not liking how Callus and the others have been handling it. Now, question for you. Did you know Tarkin when this episode aired?
That was my question to you as well. I'll be honest, because in the original trilogy, like, I'm sure there's a whole fan base out there that's like, yeah, we love Tarkin, like, loved all the novels and stuff. But me personally, I love Peter Cushing. I think he did an excellent job. I just love him as an actor. When we first got into Rebels, as far as the prequel trilogy went, I wasn't as quite as invested in it. I mean, I had some understanding when he started speaking who it was. But for some reason, I couldn't picture Peter Cushing's face in that uniform. I don't know. I had something weird going on in my head. Until he started speaking. Oh, that's the guy that was on the Death Star that blew up. Yeah, that guy. But I couldn't remember Tarkin's name for some reason.
That was a kind of similar experience with me. I remember when I was watching this in our living room, and the Imperial March was like, oh, they're playing, you know, and then he landed, and I was like, okay, this guy must be somebody important, you know, but I had no idea. I feel like viewers that knew were probably freaking out at the beginning.
Yeah,
of the
yeah.
But for me, I was like, okay, there's a new Empire. But like you, when he started speaking, I knew his voice, because he has such a recognizable cadence. Of course, it's not Peter Cushing, it's Stanton doing an impression of Peter Cushing. So I remember Peter Cushing in the original trilogy. Okay, if that's the one, kind of like you. Then,
yeah.
But I didn't know his name.
I just knew, like first my reaction went to, oh, that's the guy that was on the Death Star played by Peter Cushing, too. Oh, crap, that's the guy that was, like, giving orders to Vader in
yeah,
A
that's,
New Hope.
When I was saying people were probably freaking out, that's probably why, because they know he holds such a high authority in the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I had no idea who he was. I just knew that he was played by Peter Cushing in the movies. That's all I knew. And there's a whole, like you said, fan base around Tarkin that I didn't know about until this.
Yeah.
So he arrives, and he, interestingly enough, he calls Lothal a backwater world, which I found interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Minister Tua that because of Governor Price being absent, which we don't even see her until season 3 or 4.
I know, I'm sitting here going, We keep hearing Governor Price's name that's brought up, but we don't see this person, mm-mm. You know? When we do see them later, I'm like, where are they this entire
yeah.
time? I think at one point, entire day, they're like, oh, she's in their regards, but, you know.
She's off with the Emperor?
I guess they're celebrating. I don't know, you know, what she's doing during this time.
But then he says something like, he's not liking how this rebel cell is kind of getting the better of them. And he says... He tells Minister Tua something along the lines of, the Empire is interested in the industrial interest of Lothal.
Right.
Which is kind of, I didn't really think about this, it kind of ties into later what happens in 3 and 4 with, I'm not going to say it,
yeah.
But it's more, they're seeing it more as we can use this planet for their resources.
It goes back to resources. It's not about the people or,
mm-hmm.
but I do think that, and what I'm going to talk about later, is this idea of hope and the way that Tarkin sees it versus the way we previously saw it in the last episode.
True.
Is that, yes, you need the resources, but if you have people trying to start a rebellion in the very same planet you're trying to extract resources from, it's just going to make it more difficult and a challenge for you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to take someone's resources when they're submissive, they've given up hope, maybe they're on the outside of the Empire, maybe they think they're getting some protection, but harder when people are more resistant to, hey, this is not a good thing you're doing to me and my planet, you know.
Right. And, so basically we start this episode with him kind of chewing them out in a way of like, this is a small rebel cell. I don't understand why they're causing you guys so much issues. And then she says, well, their leader's a Jedi. And he's like, he's not even having that. He's like, I don't think he is one because he thinks they're all dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's funny that it was kind of like chewing you out. And then that was their thing. Like, well, their leader's a Jedi and that's why we're having trouble. Like.
But also the fact that it's interesting how he's like, oh yes, the fabled Jedi of old. I'm like, dude, you were around when they were. And then the very next sentence, I met these so-called Jedi. I was like, are you calling yourself old? Because
it's kind of an oxymoron, like, oh, they're just myth, but I was around when they were around. Which is kind of.
So it's almost like him saying, like, yeah, they're not a myth, but they're dead. So it's not worth my time, you know?
Yeah. And that's why I love how he says, oh yeah, let's not forget about the sudden appearance of a Jedi. Unfortunate, we don't have someone to deal with him. And he looks at the Inquisitor like, side eye.
Ooh, burn.
So that happens throughout the episode. Then we cut to the middle of a chase scene with speeder bikes with Ezra, Kanan, and Sabine. I think later on it's revealed that they're getting supplies, and that's why they're being chased. It's interesting that we start this episode right in the middle of a job, I guess.
And we'll say the part when Kanan spins backwards on the speeder bike and shoots is so freaking cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of good animation in that sequence. So they get that job done, and they return to the Ghost, and they walk right into Zeb and Hera watching the HoloNet, and they see an interview with Gal Travis, which is the traitor we just saw in the last episode. And the guy interviewing him is like, I am so glad that you've been recommitted to the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, to me is just so shady. Not shady, but just, like, okay,
gross.
Like, I think we talked about this last episode, how he has no use anymore, so now they're having to kind of...
They're still kind of using him.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, oh, we have to make an explanation of you turning, mm-hmm. air quotes around turning, to the Empire, but also, like, using him, but for them, for their propaganda to spread.
Right, and he calls the rebels, their Ghost crew,
insurgents,
I think, or criminals.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm offering a reward for their capture, but I hate that recommitted to the Empire section, because it makes you wonder, the people that don't know he's a traitor are thinking, well, he gave up, why don't... we just give up.
Right. And I think it goes back to this whole idea of hope where when Kanan's idea of hacking the transmission mm-hmm. to give a message to the people, not the people of the Thal, but other systems, is because if there are cells, which at this point, the Rebel crew, I think, but maybe besides Hera, mm-hmm. doesn't even know there's other factions doing this.
Right.
They think they're it. So she also knows, but maybe Kanan also knows, that if there is any sort of rebellion, their morale is in the toilet right now.
Right.
Because the guy that they thought was on their side is actually, in their eyes, has always been a traitor or is turning traitor.
Right. And that's what's interesting about Kanan. It's interesting he had this idea. It's almost like, well, you can spill or spread your propaganda, so how about we actually tell the truth? I think that's what he says. Like, we're going to say what the Empire never does, and that's the truth. And rightfully so, because they're lying. I mean, they called them criminals. Mm-hmm. So let them at least defend themselves. So they have this plan. They're going to hack the tower. And then we cut back to Targon, and he invites, I say invites, probably demands it, Commandant Oresko and Taskmaster Grint into his office, and he's basically, they've been around them enough, they've been in season one a lot around the Ghost Crew, and just asking them about details on them. But then he says, you know, they say, well, we ran into them recently, and they were on speeder bikes, and they stole supplies, but there weren't any casualties. Almost like, well, they're just being a nuisance.
Yeah.
And then Tarkin says something interesting. He says, that's interesting, no casualties. This rebel cell is more principled than others. So Tarkin's the first one that tells us they are not it. Mm-hmm. There's more.
And possibly these more people are factions, what does he say, factions, tribes, whatever you want to call them, they're more violent than this
radical,
particular
yeah.
radical than this particular cell.
So that's what I call it. I didn't catch that the first time. Like, he's the one that told the viewer that
yeah.
there's more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says that the reason, you know, by not capturing the Jedi and not killing him, he said he has this, gives this speech about, by leaving him alive, you allow him to kind of be a symbol of hope, like they were back when it was a republic.
Right. And it's a matter of snuffing out the light, the hope, any kind of hope, because, again, like I mentioned, it'll be really hard to conquer people that hate you or hate you enough to resist you.
Right. And that's what's interesting about Targon is he, you find out early on that he is very strategic. Before I get into that, though, we've had many deaths,
yeah.
actually, if you count all the stormtroopers and stuff. He tells Inquisitor to, he doesn't really tell him. That's what's creepy about
he
it.
He says, failure or something I cannot tolerate anymore or something. And he, like, turns away from him. And then we see the Inquisitor stretch his lightsaber. Of course, it's off screen, you know. But we obviously, that would obviously decapitate someone.
Yeah.
And I did find it interesting that someone in a review I just looked at said, goodbye, David Shaughnessy. He voices both of them.
Oh my gosh, it's the same guy?
Yeah, so can you imagine you go into a booth to record, like, yeah, both your characters get axed in the same episode? But also,
like, it's over.
Like, did you see Minister Tua's reaction to that?
Yes.
That's something I didn't catch when I first watched it, which explains some things that happen, you know, with her idea later. Mm-hmm. Like, oh crap. Like, they're willing to kill our own if we don't do what
they
ask us to do.
Kallus is a little more, I don't know, he has a reaction too, but it's not as shocked as Minister Tua.
Yeah.
And it might be because he's more of a field operative than she is. That might be
He might be a seasoned person. He might have seen some things, you know. Mm-hmm. She's kind of
bigger.
Figurehead, paperwork kind of person, you know.
Mm, yeah.
Until recently, I guess.
So yeah, that happens. So goodbye, Commandant Oresko and
yeah.
Taskmaster Grint. I always have to read that, really.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what did you think of them dying?
It was a shock to me, too, because I was like, it was kind of like that, too. I'm like, oh, okay, this guy's not messing, because I still didn't know who he was. This guy's not messing around. Like, Now, a lot of people complained that they weren't on screen.
Yeah.
Because it kind of cut away as they were getting sliced, I guess. But to me, that made it more powerful.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of imagining that they cut off the head. You know? I mean, I want to get dark here, but
your imagination can do some...
It definitely shocked
things,
me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think this was a turning point. So I was like, okay, we're getting into, of course, we're approaching the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I knew there was only like 14 or 15 episodes of the season one. So I knew that. So I knew we were approaching the end of the season. So like, this is starting to get more, not dark, but more heavy. Like the Ghost
yeah.
crew is going to be challenged more.
I think it definitely ups the stakes.
Yeah.
you know, we've seen being presented with the idea of death, not just on just from either side. I mean, it's one when you blow up a tie and you can't see who, like, yeah, those guys probably didn't make it. but when it's, like, this strategic and this, like, in your face, like, you're like, okay, but, and that was on their side. What are they going to do to rebels that they capture, right. You know?
And that's the thing, too, is, like, they're wanting them for information. Mm-hmm. I think that's why Tarkin wants, because, like, I think that's what he's going back to what he said about the rebel cells, is he said they lack unity.
Yeah, he does say that.
You can't find an empire if you're not united. Because, you know, these people are over here doing their thing, and you're over here doing your thing. If you're not united, it's better to be united to take on an enemy than it is to be
split up,
because when you're split up, one, you're more vulnerable. But yeah, I think that's what Tarkin is all about, is getting information from them, if they have any to give. Because the Ghost Crew doesn't even know, I don't think, that they're part of a cell, or that there are other cells. So, continuing on the outline, scouting the communications tower, Kanan, Sabine, and Ezra spot an Imperial probe droid. It doesn't see them, but they must take action before it sees their speeder back. So at this point, going into their plan earlier, Sabine says she can get a data spike into an Imperial comm tower so they can get a signal and transmit their message of inspiration that they want to transmit. But, before this happens, going backwards, sorry, Tarkin orders that Callus dispatch probe droids throughout Lothal so he can figure out where they're hiding, what they're up to. And unfortunately, they dispatch one right at the front door they're trying to get into, unfortunately. But I think that kind of lets them know, they're kind of stepping up their game too, I think. So they can't get into the tower because there's a little pro droid there. And did you know what it... Because I know they're in the original, but I didn't.
I knew what it was because of that dang Empire Strikes Back. I'm just going back all the way back. The Empire Strikes Back NES game. Wow. When you're Luke and Hoth. I remember those dang things because they were freaking annoying. You had to keep shooting. I can still hear the noises of them.
That's a throwback down. Right there. Yeah, like, I didn't get that far, so I didn't know. I did not know what it was. So there's this little scene where they take out a probe droid because Ezra connects with a Lothcat and makes it
attack
it. And I think it's interesting, Sabine's like, well, I could have just shot it. And Ezra's like, well, they would have suspected something. Like, hey, kid, you're learning, you know? Unfortunately, though, it wasn't fully deactivated.
Yeah. Like, you could have made sure the Lothcat beat the crap out of it.
So when they flee, that's what it catches. So this gets back to Tarkin, I believe. And he immediately, it's just so creepy how he immediately is like, oh, they're gonna infiltrate our tower.
Yeah, and Callus's first thought is to, oh, we gotta up the defenses, so.
Yeah, and that's what I was gonna say earlier about him being strategic, is that, well, let them believe that they have the upper hand, and we'll trap them. Like, he's kind of the first person we've seen in the Empire that is kind of playing it like a strategy of chess.
Well, Callus as well, because we saw, I don't know if it's his idea, last time when they had Travis in the Senate building, but they didn't put...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Callus is not dumb either, so... I don't know, there's just something about Tarkin that...
But it could be Callus, like, okay, we've tried these plans before, and they never worked.
This whole episode, I feel like, meeting goes from Tarkin to the Ghost Crew to Tarkin to the Ghost
Crew. Yeah, it does go back and forth a lot.
So then we go back to the Ghost Crew, and they've got the thing ready to go. I don't want to call it a box, but, like, the transmitter.
It's called you talking about the spike?
Not the spike, the little box that's sitting that Ezra transmits the message out of. It's sitting in the Ghost Crew.
Oh.
I don't know what it's called, but it looks like a big box.
Where did that come from? Do they ever say?
Well, I think Ezra says something like...
Was it his parents' stuff?
I want to say it's his parents' stuff, because he says if we can... The data spike is what they're trying to put in to get a signal.
Oh, okay.
But so the actual transmitter recording equipment that they have in front of them. Anyway, so they're getting their plan ready, what they need to do. Like, they're going to install the spike, Hera's going to get them out of Dodge, and then they're going to go back and transmit their message. And then Sabine says something interesting here that she says, and things always go according to plan, right? And when I first watched this, I was like, I feel like something is... I have a bad feeling about this.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in this episode.
Yeah, I was like, I don't like how she said that, you know, because what if it goes wrong? Because we know, as an audience, that we know Tarkin's plan.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Yeah. And plus the little scene with Ezra, you know, he's obviously gets visibly upset. And I just love the moments with him and Kanan. And it's like, so it's fluffy, you know, it's so like wholesome. And there's that part where he's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like deflecting again, nothing. It's like, let's take a walk, you know. And this is a part where a lot of people say that Ezra can be a whiny character. But I felt like, I'm not one of those people, by the way. Just go without there. I really think that, like, his speech that he gives Kanan about, like, my parents spoke out against the Empire and I lost them and I don't want to lose you guys. Which is a valid argument, you know. I mean, they've been through a lot, but I think the fact that they are kind of doing the same thing if his parents did before they got captured or killed, or mm-hmm. he doesn't know at this point what happened to them. I think it gives it more weight to him because, like, oh yeah, I already lost one family for doing this exact same thing.
But also him saying, I don't want to lose you guys, shows how much he's grown close to these people. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the beginning, he was like, I'm just here because I wanted this shipment. So it kind of shows how he's grown as a character too. And then Kanan has this beautiful line of, we can't just stop our plan just because we're scared. And then he says something more beautiful of, we will lose, but you will lose people in life. We will lose people. There's mm-hmm. no avoiding that mm-hmm. in life. But, sorry, I don't want
to
get emotional
about
this.
Well, I mean, he was applying it to the rebellion. Like, he's like, we've lost things. We've all lost things. You know, that's why they're probably on the ghost crew. Mm-hmm. And we'll take more losses before this is over. But I do think that is something that can be applied to your life and to, you know.
But also speaking about war in general. Sorry, I'm trying to get emotional knowing what day it is.
Oh, yeah.
We're recording this on the
June 6th, 1944.
Anniversary of D-Day.
Anniversary
of D-Day. He says, we have to ready be sacrifice ourselves for something bigger. And that to me is it. It's just so, yeah, you're going to lose people, but we are sacrificing. You have to take sacrifices because this is bigger than us. Mm. It's bigger than our fears. It's bigger than how we feel. Mm-hmm. It's way bigger. So if you die, or I die, or whatever happens, whatever sacrifice we have to make, if it allows the mission to go as planned, or allows the rebellion to win against the Empire, then it's worth it.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, about the day that we're recording this on. I think a lot of people nowadays don't think that way, you know? Mm-hmm. It's we live in a world nowadays where it's very, like, we think inward, we're, right. you know, a little bit self-centered, and thinking about others and putting something bigger than yourself. I feel like that's something that we could use more of in the world. Which, by the way, foreshadowing. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it does foreshadow. Also, I'm going to have to say this. So way back in the day when I was watching Rebels, some other stuff happens later in seasons I'm not even going to get into right now. But yeah. Freddie Prinze Jr. mentioned something I never really thought about in Star Wars is the idea of the sunset. It has been a symbol for so many things in Star Wars.
I didn't think about that.
The sunset, the suns are setting when Luke is thinking about his destiny, what choices he's going to make. The sun is setting after Anakin is turning. The sun is setting when he says goodbye to Padme in one of the movies.
Oh my gosh, it is.
The sun is setting here too.
Dang.
So I never really thought about that till Freddie kind of, I'll have to go back and like put it on Twitter and outline all the moments of a sunset, but it is very symbolic in Star Wars.
And Freddie, pushing you mentioned that? Mm-hmm. Like, good on Freddie for like being the Star Wars nerd that he is and like pushing that together, because I would have never thought of that. So what does the sun setting here mean?
It can either mean something, most of the time it means something bad, or something good. It means something new is happening, or they're about to be challenged by something. Because what happens after the sunset?
Oh, okay.
It's dark. Anyway, little tidbit there. So they go ahead with the plan, even though Ezra's got some feelings about it. Sabine leads the attack, drawing the guards fire, giving the others a chance to arrive. Once inside the tower, Chopper begins to install a spike that will let them take control of transmissions. And while they're doing this, I wrote in my notes, Imperial March Sting. So you hear it again, but it's a sting of it as they're on their way to the tower. Mm-hmm. And right after that, Kanan says they're here.
Right, because they're not cleared in on what the plan Mm-mm. was. Us as audience members know what's going to happen, but them as a crew didn't understand that this was a trap.
It's a trap! Well, I think they knew there was going to be, once they started hacking into it, there was going to be Imperial presence, but I didn't think they were going to be there that fast.
Right.
Because they already knew what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. So they didn't really anticipate that part. Mm-hmm. More Imperials arrive, including the Inquisitor, and the Rebels are outnumbered. Chopper finishes his upload, but with Imperials closing in, the team can't leave through the front entrance. So this is the moment where Sabine's about to come out with Chopper, and then Kanan says, nope, they're here. We're outnumbered. We can't go back the way we came. So take the lift up to the top of the tower. And then him and Ezra kind of have this little moment, and Kanan says, I'll be right behind you. Which also...
Foreshadowing.
Foreshadows and holds weight in Star Wars.
In Star Wars lore, yeah, it's very... I'll be right behind you usually means they're not going to be right behind you.
It's like,
It usually means the opposite of that.
Right. So then Inquisitor leaps down, and him and Kanan get to another lightsaber fight. But before that happens, I have to mention this. Kallus is the first one that appears. And I love how he says, the situation is familiar. And that's a callback to season one when he first encountered him mm-hmm. with his lightsaber. And it's kind of... This is a moment, as a viewer, I was like, oh, this is gonna not end well, when I think Kanan says, same situation, same ending, you lose. And he's like, I don't think so. And the Inquisitor jumps down. I was like, I'm worried.
Like, yeah, as a viewer, you're like, ah.
The Inquisitor leaps down. Okay. Meanwhile, the ghost emerges at the top of the tower. Ezra watches helplessly as the Inquisitor pins Kanan down with the Force. And that's when Hera arrives to swoop in to get them. Mm-hmm. But obviously the plan didn't go how it was supposed to go.
They did get the spike in. I will say, good on Sabine for like doing that in such a short amount of time. And Chopper as well.
Kanan's like, you get 3 minutes. Because originally she's like, I can do it in five.
And he's like, well, you get 3 minutes. And then she's like, now you get one. Because they're here. We need to hurry.
So she really kicked it in the gear there. And then the sad moment for me is when Kanan tells... Oh, before we get to that part. So they've gone up to the lift, right? Mm-hmm. And I love this moment where Kanan takes his lightsaber and he stabs the lift controls. Yeah. Because they can't follow them. Mm-hmm.
Which, again, not great controls in Star Wars. You can just stab it with a lightsaber and just fry the controls.
But did you notice the Inquisitor's reaction to that? Mm-mm. It's kind of like, not really shocked, but like, oh, okay.
Maybe it was him thinking, is this a part of the plan?
Oh, yeah. You know,
it could have been, because I think he's also always thinking strategically.
True.
But also, something that we'll get into late, I think, guess in the next, maybe next episode, is wanting to rescue someone other than you is something the Empire doesn't understand.
True.
Because
that makes sense.
People are numbers.
I mean, they killed two guys at the beginning.
It's like, oh, you're offering yourself up to let them go? Like, it doesn't compute for me. Because right. Why would you do that?
Well, it's, again, going back to war, you protect your own. Mm-hmm. I guess an American, not just American, but like, you soldiers in war protect each other. Mm-hmm. Other people, not going to say anything here, but like, okay, I don't want to say the Nazis, because I'm sure they protected each other when they could, but the higher-ups did not.
They didn't give a crap about...
No, they did not. Mm-mm. So I think that's the Inquisitor and Tarkin, the higher-ups. They don't care. Your number. It's your duty to serve us.
Right.
You should be
happy.
Yeah, you should be an honor to serve us, you know.
The glorious death you'll get.
And if you die, we got somebody else. You know, it's...
Yeah.
So it's different in terms of rebellion in the Empire. And then... The sad thing is when Kanan tells Hera to leave him behind. But interestingly enough, he calls her by her Spectre number twice.
Yeah, yeah,
he does. And when he calls her by her name, that's when she's like...
I didn't think about that, because they always use Spectre numbers. They never use their actual names, because it's kind of like mask who they are. Mm-hmm.
That last time he calls her Hera, and she... I can tell it kills her to leave him, because mm-hmm. of their relationship. Well, there, won't they, that happens in season one.
Well, according to Freddy, they already have... Like, they're already a couple. But, yeah, I think for Hera, it's like, oh, like, I don't think she... I mean, I'm sure she, because of her backstory, like, she's had to make difficult decisions before, but I don't think quite like this before. It's right. Sort of, like, measuring how this rebellion's obviously, like, it's one thing saying this rebellion can cost someone something, it's another when that actually happens. It's easy to say in one instance, oh, I'll be fine or okay if this happens, but when it actually happens and you're there, it's like, oh, I mean, oh, crap, like, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't think this would be this hard and this difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of, like, okay... How much is hope worth to you? How much is the rebellion worth to you? Is it worth it to, you know...
Well, also you have to realize that there was no other option.
Yeah, the option... let's think of the other option. The option would be that they would stay with Kanan. They would probably all get captured, and they wouldn't be able to beam out the signal. They had to get back to the ghost, mm-hmm. where that equipment was, so they could do the transmission.
Yeah.
That was the whole point. I think, you know, with Hera, it's like, if we stay here, this defeats Kanan's sacrifice.
Yeah. That's very important.
We wouldn't. We wouldn't be able to finish the mission if he hadn't done what you just did. If we try to go and save him, it's just kind of like.
And it goes back to what Kanan told Ezra earlier, was we have to sacrifice ourselves for something bigger. You know, if we stay here and got caught, mm-hmm. it kind of defeats what he's doing. Because she kind of knows that.
Yeah. However, for me as a viewer, it was comfortable when I was a little bit less worried when Harkin said, I want this Jedi alive. So I was like, oh, good. Then, you know, maybe he won't die in a lightsaber fight. You know, maybe he'll die later. So that was, like, better for me. He's like, oh, no, they can't kill him. I was like, well, yeah, he just said he wanted him alive. To probably, you know, interrogate him and see what he knows.
Mm-hmm. So Hera leaves Kanan behind. I'd say Hera, but... She had a lot of other options, so yeah. I wouldn't blame her. They get back to the, but we don't see them yet. So after Hera leaves Kanan, we're kind of with Kanan a bit when
he puts his lightsaber away.
You know? And Tarkin, you know, comes forward. One of my favorite lines Kanan says is, "Whatever you want from me, you won't get it." I mean, the Empire knows how to break people, so yeah. That's pretty a strong mm-hmm. thing from the get-go to say. So we're with Tarkin. Again, the sun is setting.
The sun is rising.
Or rising. So there's another.
Mm-hmm. The sun is rising.
Oh, again. I didn't think about that. The sun is rising. Ah, symbolism. Yes. And as it's rising, Kallus tells Tarkin they've got a hold of the tower. And pushes a little button on his little thing. Just so, like, Tarkin can hear it, I guess. And it's Ezra speaking. And to me, one of the most... out of every season, I'm going to go ahead and say it right here. Out of every season... This is my absolute favorite moment of Ezra. It's this speech right here. And he starts it with, "We have been called rebels, but we are not. Criminals, but we are not. We are rebels fighting for the people, fighting for you." Mm-hmm. I think it's a wise choice they let Ezra do it, because then he goes into, "I've lived on Lothal.
Right.
I remember when it used to not be like this." So he's almost kind of tapping into, I mean, it's reaching other systems, but that's pretty powerful to tell just that world.
Because you're from there. You're from that world.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize, but it cuts to kind of people in the crowd as he's saying his message. And if you see, did you see the rebel symbol on the in the transmission? I didn't catch it. So this is the first time I've ever caught it and the time I've watched it. It's the Firebird symbol, but it's also got like a little, I don't know if it's like a rising phoenix. I have to
post. Is it like a holocron? Or what is it?
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean by that?
I'll post it on Twitter. Oh, okay. But yeah, I saw that interesting that I caught that. And then I love he ends it with, or he talks about with, that's what my new family helped me remember, was that their family.
Yeah.
That's huge.
But also, I think, like I wrote my notes, this is a huge moment for Ezra, because he's grown from the very inward thinking, street urchin, I'm out to survive, to... Now I remember what my parents did, and I fully understand it. And now I have another family that's helped me, you know, understand it more and about helping others and coming together. And I feel like that's totally different than the Ezra we first met.
Oh yeah, totally different. And he says, you know, stand up together as one. And that's when Tarkin just orders them to destroy the tower. But he says, stand together as one. And that's the whole thing Tarkin was trying to avoid at the beginning, was they're not unified.
Yep.
So this might have been the one thing to go, hey, we need to come together.
Because it's going across multiple systems. And at this point, we, as audience members, we still don't know how large this rebellion is, where the factions are located.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been in any one of those systems that either right now broadcast.
And then I wrote in my notes, Tarkin has that line, "You don't know what it takes to win a war, but I do." It's almost like, sure, they can say words. We can destroy that tower. What are you going to do about it?
I also think, and I don't know if you caught this, is I have it in my notes. And I don't know why, like, it made me so emotional, but hearing Ezra's voice over that tower, I mean, sure, for Kanan was very, like, emotional. Because I've been captured. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know if I ever see them again.
Aww.
And hearing his voice over that, I don't know, I'm emotional, sorry. Hearing his voice over that tower, and then he's just so freaking stoic the entire, he's not showing an emotion, he's just very, like, stone-faced toward the Empire.
Well, also,
except when they're about to fire on it, and he's kind of like, that's when his eyes wide, he's looking like, okay,
what are they gonna do?
You know, what are they gonna do? I just caught that. That was interesting.
Well, it's interesting that you say that too, because Ezra basically echoes what Kanan told him. There will be loss and sacrifice, but we can't back down because we're afraid. That's when we need to stand the strongest. That's what my parents taught me. That's what my new family helped me remember. So basically, he echoed what his master taught him. They just talked about it.
But I mean, the fact that he was that stoic in front of...
Yeah. So we end this episode with Kanan has been captured, and I think Ezra looks at everybody and says, "This isn't over." Well, first he says, I don't know if anybody heard that, and I think Hera says, "I have a feeling..." They did, because she's the reassuring space mom that she is. And then he says, "This isn't over." And she says, "No, it's not." But the way this episode ends, it ends on that staticky noise.
From the transmission. And then it kind of warps down, like it's like dying, the transmission's dying down or whatever.
So as a viewer, that was like, oh crap, what's going to happen?
It was very ominous. Is that how you say that word?
Ominous.
Ominous. Very ominous.
Yeah.
What would you rate this episode?
Oh, man. I'm going to give it 8.
That's exactly what I wrote down.
It's so good. The pacing's good, too.
The pacing's really good. A lot of good moments of growth from Ezra's character. Kanan has moved moved toward being more of a master and making those sacrifices, those tough choices that a lot of Jedi have to make.
Mm-hmm. I have another thing to add before I close it out.
All right.
So that was Call to Action. And since we're speaking of broadcasting, I'm pleased to announce that our Spotify account is up.
Woohoo!
And I will be posting that soon, so you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, and also we're on X. So give us a listen, and we'll see you next time.